Okay. Now, good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone to the study session of Mesa City Council for Thursday, February 18th, 2010. We'll begin by reviewing the agenda for next Monday's City Council meeting. Page 2. Page 3. Page 4. Mr. Brady.
On page 4, at the top, the first item, 5C, we have just a short presentation. We're going to be using some interesting new technology on with the hybrid solid waste trucks. Maybe we could have Pete and Willie just come forward quickly and give us a short presentation on what this purchase will do, kind of an innovative approach to our fleet.
Willie and Pete, welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor. Good morning, Council. This morning, what we'd like to talk about is some new technology that we're introducing in the solid waste fleet. If we go back to 2008, that's when we first introduced hybrid technology into the automobile fleet. At that time, we purchased our first Toyota Priuses, and that is an electric gasoline technology. Those cars were very successful. We ended up seeing in excess of 50 miles per gallon, and the maintenance costs have been greatly reduced. So earlier this year, we brought four.
How are the brakes on those? They're okay?
They're very good.
Oh, okay.
The accelerator?
Just want to make sure. And the accelerator's okay.
The accelerator's okay, too. Earlier this year, we also brought some additional vehicles to expand that fleet. And we're introducing some Chevrolet Malibu hybrids and now also some Ford Focuses. Really, we spread that purchasing across several different manufacturers in order to get some data on really what is the best step forward. Each manufacturer has a slightly different approach, and of course the cars are also different, slightly different in size. With that same thought and process, We wanted to take that same technology and move it into the larger trucks. And we found a niche where that appears to really take place. Slightly different technology. It is a hybrid hydraulic drive, or what is referred to as hydraulic launch assist, which sounds like we're putting solid waste trucks into orbit, but we're not. And also, this is also a conventional diesel power. So we took a look at this technology. We've investigated it, the operations in other cities, and found that there was considerable savings. So we're this morning going to present that to you. And I think the first question is what is hydraulic launch assist technology? Basically, it is a hydraulic system that is running in parallel with a conventional drivetrain of the vehicle. We're using hydraulic power to launch the vehicle from a dead stop. It is under hydraulic power up to about 25 miles an hour. So you can see that in a multiple start-stop application, you can have some real advantages there in fuel savings. When the accelerator pedal is depressed, the engine RPM does not go up. So if you're in a residential neighborhood, you're not hearing a lot of noise from accelerating trucks. The hydraulic launch assist is actuated, moving the vehicle to its next stop. One of the side benefits of this technology is that as the vehicle now has to come to a stop, we use the returning hydraulic fluid up against a hydraulic accumulator to slow the vehicle down. So we have a hydraulic retarder system that is now slowing the vehicle, which now we also have brake savings along with our fuel savings.
Pete, what drives the hydraulic? Is it electrically driven?
It is not.
Pump
there,
or whatever it is?
There's actually a pump and a motor, depending upon which direction the pump motor is turning. It is actually turning and producing the hydraulic.
What drives the motor? The engine? Or is it a separate electrical type thing that drives the motor for the hydraulic
system? The drivetrain itself does.
Drivetrain itself,
right.
Okay.
So you're taking hydraulic energy, turning it back into the mechanical energy.
Okay.
One of the obvious side benefits is we have very little fuel consumption when we're in the hydraulic mode of operation. And like once again, I mentioned that we're using this system as a hydraulic retarder to save in braking. If we look at the cost that we're we're looking at right now, over the life of a solid waste truck, we're putting brakes on a solid waste truck about every 90 days. And you've seen these trucks. They're large. They're very expensive, very labor-intensive. And further in the presentation, we'll talk about this savings. What are we trying to do here? Well, we're really trying to reduce our operational costs, reducing fuel and maintenance. That's the real savings. But at the same time, we're reducing emissions. And where are we reducing those? We're in your neighborhood. We're right in front of your house. Obviously, if we're not accelerating the engine is at idle, then we have the emission stream is reduced. And ultimately, what are we doing? We're also replacing and reducing our dependence on foreign oil, which is a national goal. Currently, the HLA technology is being used by a lot of the fleets in major cities, also in pickup and delivery with waste management and UPS. City of Phoenix is partnering with us. They're also introducing the HLA technology into their fleet at the same time that we are. I'll turn it over to Willie to talk about savings.
Pete, how long has this been around?
About a year and three quarters now.
Okay, so these are all relatively new
purchases
in these other cities.
That's correct.
And, I mean, that's not a long time to get a track record or anything, but so far, so good, or?
We were able to get data, and this next slide that you're looking at actually shows where we pulled the data from. The city of Dallas is the one that had the equipment out in service the longest. We've also reviewed tech data from Eaton Manufacturing, which is the company that actually makes the technology. The technology right now is sold to the Peterbilt Truck Company. They have a three-year option on that because they invested in the technical design. We've also reviewed the Peterbilt engineering and test results also.
Mayor and council members, the savings for our department's important because it all relates back to our cost per home for providing the service. And the first one, the reduction in fuel consumption, is because since the truck consumes no fuel during acceleration, we're expecting a 20% reduction in our fuel. Pete talked about the brake reduction. We're looking at a 75% reduction in our brake repairs. Our tire life is extended, and it's actually because we've got one less axle on the truck, so there's four less tires that we have that we're replacing. And the emissions reduction is also because we're not having to consume any fuel during acceleration. There is a surcharge on the HLA system. It's about $40,000. And our annual savings that we're estimating is $11,000, with a lifetime savings just under $80,000. We're anticipating our payback in just 3.5 years, and that's with the City Mesa truck going about 7 years for the life. As a department, we track a lot of our costs, and we'll be tracking the cost and reporting the savings on a monthly basis. We're going to compare the actual savings to our benchmarks to make sure we're hitting those targets. And we're going to test the trucks on a variety of routes. We know it's going to work on our blue and our green routes, and our trash routes we're going to be testing on and on a variety of areas, the ones close to the disposal sites and the ones that are further away from the disposal sites. And we're going to use the analysis to determine how we're going to move forward. The good news is for next fiscal year, we don't have any side loaders in the budget, so it'll give us plenty of time to evaluate to make sure that if this is the way we want to move forward, we've got enough data to support it.
Willie, is it possible that this could extend the useful life of the truck, or are there other components on the truck that that limit that?
I'll take the question. The truck is still a conventionally powered truck also. And what really wears out, what we see the greatest cost on, is not actually in the chassis itself. It's actually in the waste body. And you can imagine how many times a day the arm is deployed and cycled. And that's where we're seeing the greatest amount of cost. It's really not in the chassis. It's in the waste body itself.
Okay.
So it could we extend it out further with this technology? It remains to be seen. But right now, the majority of that is centered on the waste body.
Okay.
Any other questions? That's it?
That's it. Any other questions or comments? Mr. Richards. I'm sorry, what?
I missed how many we were buying.
Two.
There's two.
There's two.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
We're anxious to see how that.
So are we.
That works out. It's pretty interesting. Anything else on page four?
Are we going to get a presentation on 5A too? That looks pretty fun.
On which one?
5A on page 3.
New bomb robot.
I mean, that sounds way more exciting than a garbage truck, but, you know. I mean, come on, a bomb robot?
We could have combined it and put the bomb in the garbage truck. Then a twofer.
That's happened. I'm
sorry we didn't. Councilmember Richens and his need for toys. I'm sorry. Okay, so page 5 and page 6. Councilmember Finter.
For Mr. Wesley, could you just quickly go over this new Series 12 continuation license that they're talking about here?
Mayor, Councilmember Finter, I will give it my best shot. It's still maybe a little bit confusing even to us. But first of all, within the city's zoning regulations, we have two levels of restaurants and bars. If you serve at least 40% of your revenue from food sales, you can be a restaurant and you can go into the different commercial districts without a council use permit. If you are getting less than 40% of your revenues from food and the rest coming from alcohol sales, we consider you a bar and you've got to get a council use permit in the C2 and have that proper licensing from the state. The state has recently come up with a new license that they're calling the Series 12 Continuation License. And this is for establishments that have dropped below that 40% but maybe aren't really trying to be bars. They're still really trying to be restaurants. And that's the situation we have here with Simpletons. They're getting someplace closer to between 30 and 40% of their revenues from the food sales and the rest is coming from the alcohol sales. There's some things that go with this continuation license that still require the restaurant to act more like a restaurant. They can't use certain words in the title of their establishment. They can't advertise certain ways. They really have to advertise and present themselves as a restaurant. And so we feel comfortable that it really is more like a restaurant, but our ordinance hasn't really caught up with that yet. We'll deal with it as we come up with our new zoning code. But right now, if you're not meeting that 40% by our code, you're still a bar, so you have to get the council use permit.
That's the clarity I needed. You know, it'd be nice to get caught up so they don't have to go through the expense and other things.
And Tim's here for further information.
John did an excellent job explaining that. It really is something that the state monitors. They're very restrictive on how they give those out. And like John said, they go through a series of tests that they need to qualify through the state, and Simpletons has met all of those tests as far as being able to get a continuation license through the state.
And it seems like a reasonable compromise at the state level to be able to, you know, address a problem that's ongoing everywhere. And I get it. And, you know, I've always had some strong opinions about putting bars into C2 areas. But I think it's very reasonable. I'm hoping we can catch up soon so we don't have that additional.
Great. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? All right. Anything else on page 6? Great. Next item on the agenda is appointments to boards and committees. Council. Okay. Had a few, one reappointment and some new appointments to fill some vacancies on the boards. Appointments are, we all know Mr. William Egan, who's on our House Governing Board. And yes, I do remember, Mr. Kavanaugh, that you are the chair of the House Housing Governing Board. Let's see if I remember it when we actually have the meeting again next time. And then Sharon Correa and Trent Montague for the Human Services Advisory Board. We have a motion to approve these from Councilmember Summers. We have a second from Councilmember Finter. Oh, I'm sorry, more in the back. Sorry. And David Brooks. Oh, yeah. David Brooks to the Judicial Advisory Board, which I believe is starting to meet this month on some things. So Mr. Brooks will join us. And then Keiko Dillback as a new appointment on the Museum and Cultural Advisory Board. And I'd like to thank my Chief of Staff, Kathy McDonald, who's one of her primary responsibilities is coordinating the commissions and boards and does a great job in both working with you and with the community and getting qualified people to serve on our boards and commissions, which are very important. We still would love to have more people get involved. We find ourselves sometimes struggling to fill certain vacancies, and so please, if you're predisposed to give service, contact Kathy McDonald. She would love to have your name and your good services serving us.
Or your council member.
Sorry, what?
Just contact
your council member also. That's even better. That's good.
It's easier to find us sometimes.
Good. Okay, we have a motion and a second. Any questions or comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The appointments are approved. Thank you. Hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Councilman Richens.
Yesterday I went to a commuter rail stakeholders meeting down in Phoenix that talked about commuter rail. It showed various lines throughout the valley and which ones would be the highest ridership. And by far the highest projected ridership for a commuter rail line is in the Southeast Valley that comes through Mesa. So I thought it was very significant.
Did they talk about the studies? Because I'm not aware. There's other corridors that are being studied for that at the MAG level.
Right. MAG studied Yuma, Grand, Chandler,
Maricopa,
Tempe.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then there's some secondary corridors that don't have that they'd have to do some completer lines on. But for the existing lines, UP and Northern.
Burlington.
Right, yeah, Burlington, Northern.
All three of those.
The highest ridership, the Southeast Valley projected ridership, even exceeding existing lines that are operating in Salt Lake and Dallas and around the West. So, I mean, by a lot.
Was there movement to say, why don't we accelerate studies on as it relates to that corridor?
Yeah, or yeah, that's the idea. Okay. Is, hey, we have great ridership potential here. Let's move forward on see if we can get a deal done with the railroads that'll give us the track time to be able to have commuter rail coming from as far away as Queen Creek all the way into central Phoenix.
Real near to the gateway, as a matter of fact.
Right.
The line
right,
runs
yeah.
literally, what, within a half mile, mile?
Yeah.
Closer
yeah.
than that?
Yeah, it's really right on the border of the airport.
The idea, the line
gosh,
would
yeah,
be
it runs right at Pecos and, and Power.
Diagonal. Yeah, Queen Creek through
so
that gateway, downtown Mesa, downtown Tempe, Central Phoenix, then up Grand Avenue all the way.
Almost Wickenburg.
Not sure. Yeah, so that's kind of the starter line that they envision. They can get the track time on Burlington Northern, but not quite on UP yet. So they're trying to work out details.
Gotcha. Thank you, Councilmember Kavanaugh. Sorry, it's early.
Thank you, Mayor. There are two events I'd like to comment on. I know the Vice Mayor will talk about Sister Cities, I'm sure, when he gets a chance to comment, but we were also busy back here on Friday night. On behalf of the city, I attended the Sister Cities event at Ho'okam Park on commemorating the opening of the Olympics. We had a very nice crowd of people. Many of our Canadian winter visitors were there, and it was a very nice event. And our Parks and Recreation staff did an amazing job working with Sister Cities to make that happen, so they should get a special recognition for the hard work that they did. And rumor has it, once the Olympics are all done, our Sister Cities may be getting an invitation to visit Burnaby this summer. We have not been to Burnaby in many years, and so this would be hopefully a good opportunity.
And just so people know, Burnaby is actually
the biggest
suburb
of Vancouver.
Of Vancouver, very similar to our relationship with Phoenix.
Exactly. And the second event, on Sunday, I helped, on behalf of the city, I spoke at St. Mark's Episcopal Church, helping to commemorate their 100th anniversary. And two of the early congregation, or their founding members, made some important decisions that still impact our city today. Actually, Dr. A.J. Chandler was a founding member of that parish and lived in Mesa, and founded, of course, the city's first electric company, which we since have acquired, and also our first gasoline company, or gas company. And Dr. R.F. Palmer was also a member of that church. He founded the Southside Hospital, which, of course, is Banner Desert Medical Center, as well as one of the founders. He was the founder in Mesa for the Mesa Rotary Club. So St. Mark's has made a big impact on our community throughout its first 100 years. Thank you.
Good. Thank you. Vice Mayor?
Yes, sir. We had our annual visit to Guaymas, Mexico, our sister city there. It was my privilege to get acquainted with the new mayor, Cesar Lizarraga, and very nice visit getting acquainted with. We had a good time, represented well. And it's important that we work with these sister cities organizations where we get the exposure, get the relationships, and actually get some very good involvement with numerous people that help us understand culture, help us understand economics and the differences and the similarities. So it's another very successful trip. We also had Tuesday night the recognition of our Mesa Man and Woman of the Year. Very nice event, recognizing, again, one of our own previous council members, Vice Mayor Claudia Walters, and so and also Dr. Ralph Wilson. So congratulations to them.
Thank you. Anything else? Last Saturday, I had the privilege of attending the ribbon cutting for Helen's Hope Chest, which is a great partnership between the city, the Mesa United Way, and other members of the community. Actually, the United Way is working with the city to reuse some buildings in the Escobedo project, which we had been using as a city for office space. We moved out of that office space, how long ago? About a year ago. And it was vacant, and the United Way gathered together many volunteers to spruce up and paint, and turned that into a facility which provides clothing and other goods to foster children. And it's a great program because many times when kids are taken out of bad situations and placed into foster care, they actually walk out of the house with literally only the clothes that they're wearing. And so this is a great service that allows these, and by the way, the state provides virtually no funding to foster parents for clothing, basics, things like that. So using donated goods and the city offices that are now being reused in the middle of an otherwise vacant Escobedo project, it's a great combination that provides good service to the community, certainly to the foster children, and also gets some presence and some activity in an otherwise vacant area. So great win-win. Senator John McCain was there, along with the CNN cameras, which was interesting. Representative Harry Mitchell, Speaker Kirk Adams, Representative Cecil Ash. We had, again, about, probably 100, 200 people. It was a good turnout. So a great, great effort, and a lot of people were involved, so thank you for that. Anything else? Okay, Mr. Brady.
Mayor and Council, just to remind everyone that on Monday, this coming Monday, the court building will be open in their new facility, and they've been busy making that transition move over there. We'll actually have a ribbon-cutting grand opening ceremony later on. It'll be middle of April, and we'll get more information out there. We have some special guests that will be here for that, so we wanted to make the schedule work for that. But beginning tomorrow, Monday, the court business will be conducted at the new location. Also, to remind the council members that are involved with Intergovernmental Affairs Committee, that will follow the study session today. And this Saturday, the city is hosting a document shredding event. So residents can bring their 5 boxes of paper to be shredded from 8 to noon at the North Center Street location. And then Councilwoman Higgins, do you want to talk a little bit about Monday, February 22nd, your prayer breakfast?
Sure.
I think it's a good idea. You want me to do
no,
it?
No, this Monday, the 22nd, will be our second annual Mesa Prayer Breakfast with approximately 60 to 100, we're still counting, faith leaders from our community will gather together and pray for our city and people and community. And what else? And we'll be sharing on the successes that our faith and community partnership has. I'm not thinking very clearly this morning. Successes that we've had over the year, and a program that will launch, I Help Mesa, that will help be launched in March, which more details will follow. Because if I start talking now, we'll be having the meeting till about 9-10 o'clock. And Mayor, I think we have other things to do, but. It's very exciting, and I'm looking forward to a great event.
Right.
Thanks.
Thank you. And then, a reminder, we do have a council meeting on Monday, February 22nd. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you, Councilmember Higgins, for your work in that. You've done a great job. Okay. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak in public?
No requests, ma'am.
All right. Entertain a motion to move into executive session. A motion from the Vice Mayor, a second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We will now move into executive session. Thank you very much.